A Ekhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, if you've ever felt kind of stuck on life's big questions, those ones that just don't seem to have a single easy answer, well, this deep dive might be exactly what you need. We're not hunting for some dusty, abstract, capital P truth today. Instead, we're digging into American pragmatism using the really insightful work of John R. Shook as our guide.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Pragmatism. It's less about sitting back and contemplating and much more about, well, doing. Our goal here is really to get Shook's main point across, that philosophy's real job isn't finding the absolute answer, but being a practical, effective method for tackling actual human problems, the messy ones.
Totally. I mean, think about it. The world changes so fast. News, tech, politics. Certainty feels like ancient history sometimes. We need ways to handle all that ambiguity. And this look at Shook's work really shows how pragmatism gives us, you know, an intellectual toolkit for acting smart and adapting in this complex world. It kind of gives us permission to treat our own beliefs more like, well, like hypotheses to test out.
And John R. Shook is the perfect guide for this. He's a really distinguished American philosopher, a top scholar on classic American pragmatism, you know, the big three, Pierce, James, and Dewey.
Yeah, and what's great about Shook, it isn't just that he knows the history inside out, PhD, published ton. It's his unique angle. He doesn't treat pragmatism like some artifact in a museum.
Exactly. He's more like an advocate, a translator for today. He sees pragmatism as this vital, living philosophy. Mm-hmm. His whole project is showing us, here in the 21st century, how these older ideas are actually perfectly suited for our modern challenges. Ethics, science, education, politics, all of it. He's saying, look, these tools work, use them.
That focus on using it, on making it accessible, that's key, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Shook basically argues pragmatism flips the whole script on philosophy. It shifts the focus away from those impossible questions like, what's the ultimate nature of reality, and brings it down to earth. Okay, what are the practical consequences of believing this idea? Does it help us actually solve anything?
It's a huge shift, and you have to remember where it came from. Late 19th century America, a real crisis of certainty. You had Darwin shaking things up, the trauma of the Civil War. Those old metaphysical religious foundations were crumbling. So people needed a new way to ground knowledge, something based on, you know, human experience and science.
Right, and that famous metaphysical club in Cambridge. You can just imagine the conversations, right? These brilliant people realizing the old answers weren't enough, needing a philosophy built for actually doing things, for moving forward.
And Shook really stresses this. His goal is to rescue pragmatism from the crude misunderstandings, like that cynical idea that it just means whatever works for me is true. No, he presents it as this sophisticated, very humanistic approach that demands constant experimentation, serious thinking, and crucially, democratic cooperation. It's about smart collective action, not just selfishness.
Okay, so let's unpack the architects of this, the big three. We should probably start with Charles Sanders Peirce, the founder, right? The logician, the scientist of the group.
Peirce, yeah. His big contribution, the one that lasts, is the pragmatic maxim. Now, this isn't really a theory of truth itself, more like a rule for getting your thinking straight. He basically said the meaning of any concept, well, it's found entirely in its conceivable practical consequences. What difference would it make in practice?
So if I want to understand, say, hardness, I don't need some abstract definition. I need to know what it means in practice. It won't get scratched easily by other things. The meaning is the observable result.
Exactly that. For Peirce, this was mainly a scientific method, a way to get clear thinking within what he called a community of long-run inquirers. Basically, people committed to testing ideas over and over until they arrive at a stable belief. It's like the philosophical thumbs up for how science actually works, with peer review and ongoing testing.
Okay. Logic from Peirce. Then comes William James, the charismatic one, the psychologist. He took Peirce's ideas and really applied them to, well, to life, to belief, and maybe most famously, to truth itself. He talked about its cash value.
Right. James saw truth differently, not as some static property of an idea, but as something that happens to an idea. It becomes true when it gets verified in our experience, when it helps us navigate life successfully. So a true idea, for James, is basically a tool that works, a successful tool for dealing with reality.
Ah, but that's where the critics jump in, right? Yeah. Saying it sounds like if it works for me, it's true. How does Shook handle that? That seems like a tricky point.
Shook clarifies this really carefully. James's idea of working isn't just about feeling good right now or what's convenient for one person. An idea has cash value only if it works robustly, consistently, over time, and fits well with all our other established beliefs and experiences. It has to prove itself useful for the community, really, in the long haul. It's a tough test, not just, oh, I like this idea.
Okay, that distinction is super important. And speaking of James, we can't skip the will to believe, right? That famous essay.
Yes. That's James applying pragmatism to those really tough personal choices. He argued that in certain situations, forced choices, high stakes, especially around morality or maybe religion, or the evidence just isn't decisive either way. Well, in those cases, choosing to believe something on faith can actually be rational. Why? Because sometimes the belief itself can help create the outcome. Like, believing you can climb the mountain might actually give you the strength to do it. It really highlights that human psychological side of pragmatism.
Right. So, from Pierce's logic and James's psychology, we get to John Dewey, the great synthesizer, the one who really turned pragmatism into a whole way of life.
Mm-hmm.
His big idea was instrumentalism.
Exactly. Instrumentalism, the idea that all our knowledge, our concepts, theories, even our values, they're all just instruments. Tools. Tools that humans develop to solve particular problems and adapt to the world.
And Dewey didn't just keep this in the study. He took it out into society, right? His view of democracy.
Oh, absolutely. For Dewey, democracy wasn't just about voting or government structures. It was a moral ideal. He called it a mode of associated living. It's about continuous collaboration, open communication, and treating social problems like experiments we solve together. Society always needs fixing, and democracy is the best method we have for that ongoing glue project.
And that naturally connects to his ideas on education, moving away from just memorizing facts.
Yes. Towards hands-on learning, inquiry. He wanted schools to produce citizens who could think critically, pragmatically, and participate effectively in that ongoing democratic experiment. Active problem solvers.
So, looking beyond the founders, how did pragmatism fare? Did it stick around?
Well, it had its ups and downs. It kind of faded for a while in the mid-20th century when philosophy got very abstract and linguistic. But then it had a major comeback. You had these neo-pragmatists emerge, people like Richard Rorty, Cornel West, Hillary Putnam, who picked up the threads and re-energized the whole approach for a new era.
Rorty, for instance, focused a lot on language, right? Challenging the idea that our words could ever be a perfect mirror of reality. Shook shows how these thinkers proved pragmatism wasn't just a historical phase. It was still incredibly relevant.
And its spirit, its temperament is definitely alive today, even if people don't slap the pragmatism label on it. You see it in things like agile methodology and tech, that whole cycle of plan, build, test, learn, adjust, iterate, iterate, iterate. And it's absolutely the philosophical underpinning of evidence-based policy. The focus isn't on ideology. It's on, does this policy actually work? What does the data show? Let's test it and see.
That connection to agile and policymaking really makes it click, doesn't it? Okay, let's zoom in on some of those core themes and how they might change how we think. First up, rejecting foundationalism.
Right. So ditching foundationalism means you stop looking for that perfect, unshakable bedrock for knowledge. You accept that knowledge isn't some flawless mirror of reality. It's a human tool, fallible, always improvable. And that's incredibly liberating, actually. It frees you up to focus on testing and revising your beliefs instead of feeling like you have to defend them to the death as absolute truth.
Which leads right into that pragmatic view of truth as a process. Mm-hmm. Dewey's warranted assertability. Truth isn't some fixed thing you find. It's what we're currently justified in claiming based on our best inquiries so far. It's provisional, dynamic.
Yeah, it demands a certain humility.
Yeah.
You have to be willing to update your truth when better evidence comes along, which ties into the next big theme. Experimentalism and fallibilism.
Fallibilism, the idea that we might be wrong.
Exactly. Pragmatism pushes us to treat all our beliefs, even the ones we hold dearest, ethical principles, political views as hypotheses, things to be tested against experience and consequences. This willingness to potentially be wrong. Well, it's probably the best defense we have against rigid dogmatism and ideological thinking. Keeps us learning.
And finally, let's circle back to belief as a habit of action. This one really hits home.
It does. A genuine belief, for a pragmatist, isn't just thinking something in your head. It's a disposition, a readiness to act in a certain way based on that belief. So, you know, if you say you believe in environmental protection, but your actions consistently show otherwise, pragmatism kind of gently points out that your actions reveal your real working belief, regardless of what you say. Your habits tell the story.
Oof, yeah. That's a challenging one. Okay, the pragmatist also gave us some incredibly pithy, memorable lines. Let's touch on a few key quotes or ideas.
They definitely had a way with words, starting with Pierce's maxim again, that rule for clarity. Consider what effects, which might conceivably have practical bearings, we conceive the object of our conception to have.
It sounds a bit dense, but the core idea is simple, right?
Super simple, really. It just means, forget the fancy abstract talk. The meaning of your idea is tied completely to the difference it would make in practice. What would you do differently? What would you observe differently? That's the meaning.
Then James, with his focus on the human side, the true is the name of whatever proves itself to be good in the way of belief.
Yeah. Again, sounds simple, but it's deep. Truth isn't just accuracy. It's about usefulness, fruitfulness. A true idea is one that helps us effectively organize our experience, navigate the world, achieve our goals. You know, as human beings, it's a successful tool.
And Dewey, always bringing it back to the community, democracy is more than a form of government. It is primarily a mode of associated living, of conjoint communicated experience.
Love that one. It lifts democracy up from just being about institutions and rules. It becomes an ethical way of life, a commitment to working together, talking openly, and using our shared intelligence to figure things out as we go.
Okay, so how do we actually use this stuff? Let's make it practical. Take personal decision-making. Big choices, like a career change or moving. Pragmatism offers an antidote to analysis paralysis, right?
Absolutely. Instead of endlessly searching for the single perfect answer, which probably doesn't exist, you treat your preferred option as a hypothesis.
Just where? Just try it.
Kind of, yeah. You choose a path, you act on it, you pay close attention to the results, the data, and then you adjust based on what you learn. Crucially, mistakes aren't failures in this view. They're just valuable information for your next step, your next experiment.
And that takes so much pressure off. And what about disagreements? Arguments with people or even civic debates?
This is huge. Pragmatism encourages shifting the focus. Instead of getting bogged down in arguments about abstract principles like pure freedom versus pure justice, you steer the conversation toward concrete consequences.
So instead of fighting about ideology,
you ask practical questions. Okay, what are the likely effects of policy A versus policy B on, say, local businesses or commute times or air quality? Can we agree on what outcome we want? And can we maybe test different approaches to see what actually gets us closer to that outcome in this specific situation? It moves it from an ideological battle to collaborative problem solving. Let's find what works.
That feels so much more productive. Thinking about Shook's whole presentation of this, what really struck me was the sheer hopefulness of pragmatism. It takes philosophy from being this kind of detached, maybe even disempowering search for absolute certainty we'll never find, and turns it into this active, empowering toolkit for making things better, step by step, and seeing the direct line to things like agile development today. That was pretty cool.
For me, the lasting takeaway is the deep sense of responsibility it gives us. Pragmatism tells us the future isn't already written. It's open. It's shaped by our choices, our intelligence, our willingness to experiment and learn together. Shook does a brilliant job showing that this philosophical tradition isn't just history. It's maybe one of the most valuable resources we have for dealing with the complexities and, frankly, the challenges of our current world. It encourages intelligent action.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.